The Maine Calling Book Club reconvenes to discuss Jim Nichols' novel, Closer All the Time. Closer All the Time is set in the fictional Maine coastal town of Baxter, sometime after the Second World War. But its characters seem modern, or maybe timeless, in their struggles and relationships. Maine author Jim Nichols is best known as a short story writer. This novel is a collection of interconnected short stories. We meet clam diggers, waitresses, teenagers, and town drunks, all treated gently and insightfully. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the Maine Calling Book Club, we gather to discuss Jim Nichols' novel, Closer All the Time, with Bill Lundgren, Genevieve Morgan, and Lewis Robinson. If you've had a chance to read the novel, won't you join the conversation? Call us, tweet, post on Facebook, or send an email. Our discussion is just ahead, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, our Maine Calling Book Club reconvenes to discuss a novel that has been compared to the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel Olive Kitteridge. Jim Nichols' Closer All the Time, like Olive Kitteridge, is a series of interconnected stories set in a coastal Maine town. I have three guests with me in the studio to discuss this novel and why it struck a nerve with each of them. In the studio with me, Genevieve Morgan. She is a writer and Island Port Press editor. She's the author of Fog of Forgetting and Chanterelle, which are the first two books in her Five Stones trilogy. She's also the author of Undecided, Navigating Life and Learning After High School. Bill Lundgren is an adjunct professor of English at Southern Maine Community College and a regular book reviewer and contributor to the literary blog BillAndDavesCocktailHour.com. And Lewis Robinson is the author of the novels Water Dogs and Officer Friendly. His short fiction and essays have appeared in Sports Illustrated, the New York Times Book Review, and on NPR's program Selected Shorts. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you read Closer All the Time? If so, give us a call. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all here. I think you're all returning to Maine Calling in our book club, which is just terrific. And Genevieve, I understand that as an editor at Island Port Press, you chose this novel and that it was just in a pile with other manuscripts. Is that true?
It is true. Jim Nichols is a terrific writing talent that's been in Maine, and he's won numerous awards for his short story work. But he was very humble, and he sent in this collection of stories to me very early on when I first started at Island Port Press, unsolicited. So with no agent, no note that he had a cover letter that explained that he had written books before and his awards that he'd won. But it was very humble, very much like Jim. And I had a system where I would read manuscripts in the afternoon between 3 and 5 when I left. And I picked his manuscript up. I read his cover letter. I thought, And I started to read, and I couldn't stop. And time just evaporated while I was reading. And for me, if when you're reading as many manuscripts as I read as an editor, if that happens, there's a magic that takes over, and you know you have to pursue the manuscript. You know you have to pursue the book.
Mm. So. Bill, you also read a lot of books, and you gave Closer All the Time a really marvelous review. What distinguishes this novel for you?
Jim has such literary gifts, and yet he writes with such restraint. I think Lewis said this book is free of tricks. It reminded me of The Remains of the Day by Ishiguro, and it reminded me of Alice Munro's work, where you're just lulled into this world that is very, very real, and you don't understand the power of what's happening until you finish it, and then you're just blown away because what he's accomplished is done so subtly, but it's undeniable. I tell my writing students that one of the keys, one of the really delicate things is not to overdo it. And Jim never overdoes it in this piece, although he could. He has literary skills to put together all sorts of pyrotechnics, but it just remains so understated and so real and so true.
All right, Lewis, like me, you read the book very recently. What did you think of it?
I loved it. I think that, the best books out there are built kind of not from the outside in, not like from based on a premise or a gimmick, but rather like built from closely observed moments. And Jim does that so well. So he, you know, this is very much a Maine book and a book about a small town, but it's not built from an idea of a Maine town. It's more really just, you know, Jim's experience, closely observed moments, knowing people, and then building stories from those experiences. So that's the kind of writing I love.
Okay. It's been compared, as we said at the top, to Olive Kitteridge, which is interesting. Olive Kitteridge is obviously about a very different kind of character than is in Jim's book. But I guess it is common in that it's interconnected short stories, a coastal Maine town. And, you know, you could add Ernie's Ark to that trilogy. Is this a coincidence, or is this kind of a emerging genre? Are we going to see more and more of these novels that are interconnected short stories that add up to something more?
I would just add you should also include Officer Friendly in that trilogy, which makes it a quartet.
A quartet, okay. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk to that? How does an author make the decision to, instead of writing the traditional chapters that follow one from the other, or perhaps chapters that look back in time but still come back to the present, why interconnected short stories with characters who overlap?
Well, I think it's this is a great way to paint a portrait of a Maine town. This is like a celebration of the quotidian. He's taking, this is how a community works. It's you know, there are the connect. You know, we witness the connections as the novel builds. We see these closely observed moments of, well, first Johnny, who reappears throughout the novel, plays a significant role in the early part and also at the end, but then is referred to throughout the book. That just feels very true to life. I mean, it just seems. That's our sense of community. I mean, obviously, like in any given town, a person is kind of the hero of his own life, but then there are peripheral characters, and then you switch vantage points, and you see it just feels like that's the way community is built, and Jim is just a master of recreating that feeling. And like I said before, not always considering the panoramic view, but rather kind of like the isolated vision of individual characters, and then that builds into a larger portrait.
And Genevieve, you were part of the decision-making process of how to put this book together. Did it come to you as a collection of interconnected short stories, or
it came to me as a collection of characters in this one town. So Baxter, the town of Baxter, was always and the river that runs through Baxter is a river town, which rivers are full of metaphor. And that was the connection that remained throughout the entire process. But what I think, and I'll speak for Jim a little bit here, he said this before, that Jim, the setting of the book takes place between World War II and late 1980s. Before social media and the internet really took over. And Jim himself grew up in a small town in Maine. And speaking to what Lewis has said, there's a fabric that's woven as you grow up in a small town where characters that you grow up with, it's not uncommon that you might marry your high school girlfriend and then divorce her, and then she'll marry your high school best friend who's divorced the woman next door. And so the sense that you're growing up with these people at the same time, as well as knowing them, their dirty laundry in some ways too, enabled Jim to write a book that has such humanity, but also really speaks to a time period that was more closed, I think. I mean, I don't know if that's the right word, but it wasn't as porous as the communities we grew up in now.
It's interesting to me because I didn't realize when the book was taking place until a little bit into it. And I'm sure that was on purpose. But it reads
I guess now that I'm thinking about this, Genevieve, with the exception of there not being social media and the internet, it reads very modern. These characters could be living today. Bill, you're grinning.
It's interesting because, you know, it is pre-internet, pre-social media. And I think it captures sort of that almost xenophobic insularity of rural Maine small towns without casting judgment on it. As Jen pointed out, these characters' lives are so incredibly intertwined, but they take care of one another. There's this level of compassion. I'm always fascinated because my students have to write a research paper. And the last 3 years, I have had African students write their papers about how astonishing they find it to come to Portland and see people living on the streets. We're the richest country in the world, and yet there's people living on the streets. They come from the poorest continent in the world, and homelessness doesn't exist. And it also doesn't exist in a small town like this because people take care of one another.
It's interesting to me you say that because I think what you're talking about is the one hopeful undertone of the book, because otherwise this book makes me feel like, and I want you all to respond to this, that Baxter, Maine is a place to be gotten away from. Do you agree?
I think it is in that, you know, everyone who has made mistakes there are constantly kind of re-encountering the scene of the crime. I mean, you just can't escape that. And I think that's, you know, Jim evokes that very well. But I wanted to say something about what, and I think that's an important point. I mean, there is kind of this feeling of everyone being trapped here to a certain extent. But what Bill said about the compassion that people have for each other and the way that they look out for each other, I think springs first from Jim's ability as a writer to have that kind of empathy and compassion for his characters. That, you know, it kind of builds outward from there. He finds, you know, and these are flawed, many of them very flawed characters, and he finds ways to show how he loves them, and which, you know, helps us obviously love them too. So, I mean, Johnny's a great example. He seems to be kind of the biggest character in the book. He's kind of the main character. This is a guy who's really failed his family and has wasted a lot of his life drinking, and yet he has there's a redemptive moment at the end, but it's not saccharine. You know, Jim's too good of a writer to make that mistake. He makes it very real.
No, nothing saccharine. Genevieve, how do you feel? Do you feel as though there's a balance between bleak and hopeful? I mean, you know this book almost as intimately as the author himself.
I think there is, throughout the book, a sense of claustrophobia. I think that's the word that I would choose. And I think that all of us who have, I think that that's part of what I say when I talk about the humanity of the characters, in that, to Lewis's point, that within that claustrophobia, there are moments of sheer happiness, connection, love, all of the things that happen in a lifetime happening on a very small little in a little petri dish, but all of the huge, you know, panoply of human emotion is still right there. And so, yes, these people in some way are trapped. I mean, I would argue that the river that's running through, you know, yes, the town is claustrophobic, but people do get out, they do leave, but they do come back because they're connected so deeply to their experiences in childhood or with their parents. I think one of the beautiful stories that gets overlooked a little bit in this is, or the one of the beautiful chapters is Larry Jr. And it has to do with the demolition of the Union Station down on St. John Street, and it's a child in the backseat of a car with his father and his grandfather, and he goes over in the back of his mind the story he's always been told about how his grandparents met at the Union Station, and they were French Mainers. And it's a very, very short chapter, but so full of beauty and pathos and resonance, and it really goes through this family who's lived in a very small place. The grandfather still lives in Baxter. The parents moved to Portland. The parents had to move the grandfather into an assisted living facility. And it's really a normal thing that happens all the time, but it's packs an emotional wallop. And that's really what I think the story is, stories in these books, in this book, does is takes a small little petri dish of people and blows it out and makes it applicable to the universe. I mean, to the universe of humans.
Right. So. And on the other side of the coin is that it's really fun to read if you have these connections to Maine. And perhaps if you remember the demolition of Union Station, or you've been to the desert of Maine, which makes
that.
An appearance in many appearances. So on that note, we have to take a break. This is the Maine Calling Book Club. We're discussing Jim Nichols' novel, Closer All the Time. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to hear from the author, Jim Nichols, after a break. Won't you please stay with us? This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Finance Authority of Maine, committed to expanding business and education opportunities by investing in Mainers' success, famemaine.com, and Casella, committed to boosting recycling rates statewide through its One Bin, Zero Sort program, Casella, giving resources new life. The Common Ground Country Fair in Unity takes place this weekend starting tomorrow. MPBN is once again a media sponsor and will join folks from across the state and around New England coming together to celebrate the rural and agricultural traditions of Maine and, of course, crafts, causes, and cuisine. Many of the voices and faces you know from MPBN will be there to meet you, answer any questions you might have, hear your comments, and give you a chance to try out your own public radio voice in our microphone project. Complete information is online at mpbn.net, including our goal to have 100 worn-out, unwanted, not-needed, surplus cars donated to our vehicle donation program by the end of the weekend. We hope to see you there.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, our book club has reconvened to discuss Closer All the Time by Jim Nichols. In the studio with me, Lewis Robinson. He is the author of the novel Water Dogs and Officer Friendly and other stories. His short fiction and essays have appeared in Sports Illustrated, Tin House, the Missouri Review, the New York Times Book Review, and on NPR's program Selected Shorts. Bill Lundgren is an adjunct professor of English at Southern Maine Community College and a regular book reviewer and contributor to the literary blog BillandDavesCocktailHour.com. And Genevieve Morgan is a writer and Island Port Press editor. She is the author of the first two books in the Five Stones trilogy. Her first two books are Fog of Forgetting and Chanterelle. She has also written Undecided, Navigating Life and Learning After High School. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. But before we get back to our panelists, we're lucky to have the author with us, Jim Nichols. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me, and thanks for selecting Closer All the Time.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure, and so exciting. And I should note that this is the first time that Maine Calling has chosen a new novel to discuss. So it's a little bit different. We've often stuck with novels that have been around for a long time. I'm interested in your biography. According to your jacket cover, you're a pilot, beekeeper, singer, and actor, as well as writer. Which came first?
Oh, God. A lot of those are dabblings more than avocations or vocations, but I've held a lot of different jobs. I've been a private pilot, but never a commercial pilot. I've done a little bit of singing and a little bit of acting, and nothing important, really.
Oh. So I understand you have a great story about how you got noticed as an author, a story that involves a famous writer. Am I right, and will you tell that?
Sure. The writer was Norman Mailer. I was working at the little airport in Rockland for Bar Harbor Airlines. You might remember them. And this is 25 years ago. I was trying to sell short stories at the time and had published a few in little tiny magazines, but I had higher aspirations, as we all do. And I noticed that Mailer was on the flight manifest coming up from Boston, stopping in Rockland and then going on to Bar Harbor, where he had a summer home. What happened was I brought a little magazine in that I had a story published in, and I accosted him on the airplane while he was parked, while the Rockland passengers got off, and while he was waiting to take off again and head on to Bar Harbor. So, Mailer looked up and saw me trudging down the aisle holding this magazine, and he knew exactly what was going on, but he you know, there was no way he could escape me. I was between him and the door. So I asked him to take a look at it, and I said, I don't want anything from you. All I want is to know that Norman Mailer read one of my stories, and you can leave it in the seat pocket. When the plane comes back through, I'll retrieve it. And Mailer kind of grimaced and looked at me and said, well, that's a new one. But he said, all right, and he took it. When the plane came back through, the magazine wasn't in the seat pocket. And I didn't know what happened, whether he had kept it or thrown it in the garbage or what. But a couple of weeks later, he came back through on his return trip to Boston. And I happened to be waiting on the ramp.
Just happened to.
Yeah. I made sure I was the one who put the chocks under the wheels. And then I just stood there. And after a little while, Mailer's stuck his head out the door, the little air stair door, and said, Jim? And I said, yes. So he came down the steps and said he would like the story. And then he asked if I had anything a little more ambitious that he might look at. So I reached into my pocket and pulled out another manuscript.
Nice.
Just happened to have it in there.
I was a Boy Scout at one time. So I was prepared. Anyway, he took it back with him to, took it back to Brooklyn Heights and sent me a letter a couple of weeks later telling me to send it to Esquire and including a recommendation to the fiction editor at that time, was West Hills, that he print this story. And they did, and he wrote a little intro for it. They put it in their summer reading issue. So that's gave me a leg up.
That's a great story. What? How did you get the courage to do what you did?
You know, I had nothing to lose, really. And as I said, he couldn't escape me because I was between him and that little air stair door. So, and also, there was no pressure on him, you know. I just thought I'd give it a shot.
I'm wondering about the fictional town of Baxter, Maine, Jim. It seems to me a mashup of Freeport, Owl's Head, and Bath. Am I right?
That's pretty close. Yeah, that's pretty close. You might have to throw in Thomaston.
Okay. Okay.
That's where the river came from. But yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good approximation.
We were talking in the first section of the program about the setting of the novel in the years after World War II, though it's not revealed at first. And I'm wondering two things. Why you chose not to reveal that in the beginning of the book, why the clues come in, you know, a couple chapters in, and also why you chose this era.
You know, it's just what registered with me when I started writing, connecting the stories, you know, as Genevieve had asked that I do, and it just seemed to fall in that area. When I was a kid, I was a guide at the Desert of Maine, so that kind of put that story of those references back in that time frame. And I did put a few clues in, like in the first story, he's riding an old Indian scout. In the second story, Early talks about how he lost his son at Normandy. But I didn't.
That's when I caught on, yep.
Yeah, I didn't want to instruct the reader in any way, so I figured they're smart enough to figure it out.
Well, I'll turn to my panelists. Any of you have any thoughts for Jim?
Jim, it's Genevieve. Hi.
Hi, Jen.
I think it's one of the things that was most interesting to me, having seen you work and rework the manuscript, was how you manage the time dilation, because that's a really tricky thing to do, to start in one decade and move through the book and have certain characters grow up and refer back. And you handled that so masterfully. I'm just wondering, I think it would be interesting for people listening, how you kept it all together and how you were able to envision these certain characters growing up, and how we would go back and reference that. I mean, I'm thinking of Arnold. I'm thinking of Johnny. I'm thinking of Susan.
Yeah. I was working backwards from the individual stories, which had characters of different ages that I found were so similar that they could, I could see them as older versions of an earlier character. So I was working backwards from that. But to keep it straight, I had to do a timeline. And I had to figure out which children, for example, were approximately the same age. And I went through that pretty closely to when I reworked the story for the fourth or fifth time. just to make sure there wasn't any glaring error. But I was working backwards pretty much, looking for clues.
Jim, one of the things that I love the most about the stories is the level of verisimilitude, just the truthfulness of it. When they're in that early story called Early, when they're out raking the clam flats, I mean, I've never been there. I've never done that. And yet you put me right beside them doing it. It just felt so incredibly visceral and real. And there's also that element of being an outlaw. And I've had friends who have been outlaws in various guises. So without being specific, can you speak to your personal experience with those kind of experiences?
Don't get yourself in trouble, Jim.
Or anyone else.
Confessions, that's what I want.
All the statute of limitations have gone. I think I'm okay. But first to speak, how are you doing, Bill?
Nice. I'm good.
I'm glad you're on the panel.
Thanks.
All of you guys. For verisimilitude, throw some mud in. That always works. You know, people can feel the mud and they're there. As far as life experiences, I have found out myself looking between iron bars a few times, you know, waking up in the morning, mostly non-victim crimes. Actually, all non-victim crimes.
Except for you.
So I'm not ashamed of it, really. But this the part where, in one of the later stories, where Eric remembers being in jail for shoplifting and stealing food, that was pretty much factual. And I did have to do calisthenics with a really tough guy and his associates, you know, as sort of a test, which I managed to pass, I guess, because nobody beat the crap out of me while I was there. But a lot of that stuff, you know, I've hung around with some troubled souls, and I've had my ups and downs too. So, you know, why not use it?
Oh, you use it well.
Thanks.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for joining us for the program. Jim Nichols is the author of Closer All the Time, which happens to be the subject of today's Maine Calling Book Club. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks to you and Lewis, Bill, and Jen also.
Okay, great. Bill, I like that. Is that good writing advice for your students? Throw some mud in?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, write that down and pass it on.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering about what Bill has said today, though, that you will pass on to students. What are the lessons that are direct from this novel to anyone out there? And there are a lot of us in Maine who someday hope to write a novel.
You know, when I was, I can't remember when I was in college, one of the many times I was in college, I had a writing instructor who said, you know, the hardest thing to do with a piece is take out what you're most fond of. And you develop this emotional attachment to it, but it might not really belong there. And that's what I think Jim does. There's no bells and whistles here. There's just a story very simply told. He doesn't beat you over the head with the message of it, but when you're done, it's very clear. He I think Lewis mentioned earlier, he has a great deal of respect for the reader, and he tells the story with very subtle inferences, and he challenges the reader to understand what it is that he wants the message of that story to be.
I have read it only once. Genevieve, you've read this book several times in several incarnations. Is it one of those books that's different every time?
I think different characters linger with me with each time that I've read it. The book grew in the making. So Johnny London, who Jim has described as having the biggest heart in the world that never grew sour, which I love. I think that's a motto that we should all aspire to as we get older. He was always a favorite of mine. And then as I reread, different characters that were initially lesser in my feelings about them really grew. And in particular, some of the women in the book, because Jim has, he's been called kind of a Hemingway of Maine because he has a very spare style that resonates so fully and leaves you, as Bill said, with such an emotional wallop at the end. You don't really even know what happened to you, but the book just lingers. But he really deals with women in this book in a very beautiful way. And so for me right now having read it, I refreshed myself last night. The women are at the forefront for me.
Okay. And Lewiston, as a writer and somebody who has written both short stories and fiction, what do you see in this work that maybe those of us who don't write for a living might not see? What stops you?
Well, I was struck again by it when Jim was speaking about the book. I mean, I think what I so admire about Jim as a writer and what I feel a kinship with is his willingness to evoke characters in an organic way. Like he talked about this in terms of, you know, setting the story in a specific time. He's actually not making overtures to kind of like spell things out to the reader. He's just like starting with these quiet moments, closely observed moments, trying to be so truthful to those. And like Bill said, trusting the reader to make the inferences. So it's never vague, but with space, you know, so that, you know, there's room for the reader's imagination to enter into the fiction. I mean, that's essential. I mean, not all writers do it. Jim does it so well.
The phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, it's the Maine Calling Book Club about Closer All the Time by Jim Nichols. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Genevieve, I know Island Port Press really focuses on Maine authors. Is your goal to introduce them to people in Maine, or is the goal of Island Port Press to get them out there further?
Oh, very much to get them out there further. We do focus on Maine writers, but our mission is New England sensibilities. So as long as a book evokes a sense of place that's New England-y, and that's a very hard thing to capture, right? But I think we all know what that means. And I think that for this particular novel, Jim does a masterful job at doing that. There's as we've all been talking about, there's a spareness, but a real grit and authenticity. And I think that Island Port Press is interested in stories, be they fiction or nonfiction, that have that real authentic flavor, that really ground people in a sense of New England. And that we do, just because we're a small regional press, tend to have a lot of emerging new authors. And sometimes they are people who are older, who are just starting to write after having a career in an entirely different field. So that's also exciting.
Well, we have to take another break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net or post on our Facebook page. When we return, we'll continue our Maine Calling Book Club. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Senior College Network, offering 17 senior colleges for people over 50. Learn for the fun of it. MaineSeniorCollege.org.
Comic Jim Gaffigan is preparing to perform this weekend for over a million people at the Festival of Families with Pope Francis in Philadelphia. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Gaffigan about how he's preparing, how Catholicism figures into his comedy, and about his TV series in which he plays a comic named Jim Gaffigan, who, like the real Gaffigan, has 5 children. Join us.
And join us for Fresh Air tonight at 7.
On The Next Humankind, to mark its 80th anniversary, we trace the remarkable history of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of America's great contributions to the world. From an awkward first conversation between two broken men in the Great Depression emerged a worldwide movement that has helped tens of millions. I'm David Freudberg. Join us for Humankind.
And you can hear that program this afternoon at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, our book club discusses Closer All the Time by Jim Nichols. In the studio with me, Lewis Robinson, who is author of the novel Water Dogs, and Officer Friendly and other stories. Genevieve Morgan is a writer and Island Port Press editor. Bill Lundgren is an adjunct professor of English at Southern Maine Community College. Join our conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Bill, before the break, we were talking with Genevieve about the Island Port Press mission and books that really evoke a sense of New England. Talk about the idea that someone would be known as a regional writer or a national writer, an international writer. I think, you know, people all over the world love Carl Hiaasen books, but they're very, very specifically placed in Southern Florida.
You know, to label Jim as regional is really a diminishment of what he's accomplishing, because I think, you know, you look at people like Faulkner, all of his stories took place in a little tiny county that he made up in Mississippi, Garcia Marquez, they all took place in and around this tiny mythical village of Macondo. Or Jim Harrison, all of his pieces are situated in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Yet none of them are labeled regional because people recognize the universal truths that really come out of their writing. And I think that happens with Jim's stuff too. So it's we have to be really careful, because that label regional really does an injustice, especially to a work like this.
Lewis, you wanted to talk about something we talked about earlier, which is that he's been compared to Hemingway, Maine's Hemingway. But yeah. In some ways, you think he's better, right?
Oh, well, yeah, sure. I think that...
Thank God Ernie's dead.
Yeah. The reason I wanted to make a distinction is that, and this is, you know, for prospective readers of the book, you know, certainly we can all praise Jim for his spare sentences and, you know, clear images and kind of matter of fact, you know, vivid detail. But there's a real warmth here. There's a real, you know, there's a lot of humor here. There's some hilarious moments. And I feel like that's what kind of sets him apart from Hemingway. I'd love to read the very beginning of the book. Do we have time to read a little section? Johnny London had ridden his old surplus scout halfway to Portland, filling out applications and angling for interviews. That was always harder than working itself, and by noon he was more than ready to call it a day. But when he got back to Baxter, tired, windburn, and thirsty, he saw a health wanted sign in the picture window of the town's new restaurant, and after throttling back to think about it, he went ahead and pulled the Indian over to the curb. On the sidewalk, he ran his hands through his hair and smoothed his mustache. What the hell, he thought. One more won't kill you. His reward for that impulse was a painful half hour in a cluttered little office at the back end of the building, listening to Alva Potter expound on modern business philosophy. So that gives you a little taste of, you know, Jim's sensibility. I mean, that opening chapter is a real gem.
I completely agree. That's what got me hooked. I also think, too, that Jim has a masterful way of depicting children, relationships between children. And several of his characters come of age in this book. And I was blown away by how apt Jim doesn't have his own kids. So I'm pretty sure about that. Sorry, Jim, if you do. I'm sure you don't. And the way that he was able to take these moments of coming of age, there's a moment where one of his characters touches a girl for the first time. And his reaction to that moment, he says it was like touching a live deer. You know, his feeling that he never really realized girls were real before until he touched, and it was as real as touching a deer. And there was something in that image that I think about it almost every week, because I have two teenage boys and I think about what they've been going through, and that just seems so true to me. And the book is filled with those moments.
We have a Maine Calling Facebook post from Amy. The panelists' use of phrases like free of tricks, understated, celebration of the quotidian, etc., is so apt, as is the description of the way it sneaks up on you and packs an unexpected emotional wallop. I loved this book, but I didn't realize how much I loved it until after I had finished it. Like all of Kittredge and Ernie's Ark, it uses small stories to tell a bigger story and illustrates the extraordinary quality of ordinary lives. Bill, you've got your finger on a passage.
One of my favorite pieces, which really speaks to that, is the piece called Early, when they're out being outlaws and, you know, partly getting this adrenaline rush from trying to work outside the law. But the character is emotionally reeling from the loss of the love of his life, Evangeline, who he calls Vangie. And after their adventure, he realizes that his little coffee carafe has disappeared. He doesn't quite know where it is. And he ends the story with this little piece, and it just exemplifies what he does so well. I was pretty sure it was gone, probably still bobbing along in the Baxter. That vacuum bottle was tight and might float all the way down to the bay. Maybe then the tide would wash it back in. I pictured it going back and forth for who knows how long, and eventually somebody finding it in the seaweed. They'd see the sun shining off it, and they'd open it up, and there'd be a whiff of old coffee. They'd rinse it in the surf and take it on home. I imagine they'd feel pretty lucky. And that piece, without even ever mentioning his wife that he's just lost, is all about his wife that he just lost.
And his wife who gave him that thermos that exactly. He just lost.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember thinking about that one. What a lovely and hopeful way to end a chapter that was otherwise going to make you cry.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh gosh, he lost the thermos? Not really. If, you know, we keep mentioning these novels together, if someone outside of Maine picks up Olive Kittredge, Ernie's Ark, and Closer All the Time, what do they come away with knowing about our state?
I would say, and I don't think that this is necessarily, you know, specific only to Maine, but, you know, because we're kind of famous for our stoic people, you can see, you have access to their inner lives on the page. I mean, Monica Wood and Elizabeth Strout and Jim all do this so well to kind of show us the restraint. Well, to show us, as Bill was saying, those moments of the impulse to be outlaws, but also those moments of restraint and putting action in the context of interior life. For people that are not famous for being explicit about their emotions, like we have access to their emotions because they're narrated to us.
And I should probably add Empire Falls to that list, too, because many of the things we've said about Closer All the Time, it's not an intercollected, it's not a collection of short stories that are interconnected, but you do have some of the same sense of community taking care of each other, people caring about each other in the sense of inner lives, and a sense of a place people are trying to escape from yet still return to.
Well, and I also think that readers outside of our little region would take away that we're a vastly resourceful people, because for a small state, even within the 196 pages of this book, everybody is doing something all the time at all stages of their lives. They're working, they're farming, they may be drinking, they may be getting into trouble, but even within their trouble, they're vastly resourceful, self-resourceful and also resourceful within their community. And so those kinds of that self-reliance really speaks to me in this book. And I think it's true about us.
I wanted to just read one sentence that I think speaks to this. This is a moment when these two stepbrothers are reunited. And it's narrated this way. He stands up and we think about hugging each other. We shake hands instead. So what I love about that is that, you know, obviously, like, there's that restraint, but he is aware that both he and his brother want the hug, but they don't. You know, I just think that's great. And that's so Jim right there.
Well, it also, as a non-guy, gave me a little insight to, it's a book about guys, pretty much, even though Genevieve has talked about how beautifully he depicts the female characters.
It is, and there's sort of that male quality of a little hesitation about really being explicit about intimacy. So these two guys are, I mean, should we hug? No, let's just shake hands. There is inherent in small communities, I think, everywhere, and it really comes through here. There's a resistance to that closeness into, in this book, there's a lot of tension between the outside that is sort of moving into this area and creating this tension because these people have new ideas. They think differently than the people who have lived there forever, and the world is changing dramatically. We talked about this being pre-internet. I mean, just think of how different the world is today compared to the world that Jim depicts in this book. There is that insularity that has sort of been broken down, but it's really in this book. It's really at the heart of it.
Bill, I'm having a flashback as I hear you say that to our first Maine Calling Book Club in Country of the Pointed Firs, in what our audience and what our guests seem to come to the conclusion of. It's about life changing around us in
Very
a small
so.
Town.
Yes.
And the folks in that small town coping with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think the title speaks to that because it doesn't say that we've achieved closeness. It says we're getting closer all the time, meaning that it is an active process and that all of the characters and perhaps many of us are constantly wanting and desirous of hugging but shake hands instead. So we're trying to move towards each other constantly, like a river to the sea, but we perhaps haven't achieved that in the way that we would like to.
Well, let me ask you this. I've always wondered about titles. Do manuscripts come to you with titles on them?
Usually they do. This one was entitled something different, and Jim and I went round and around and around and around about what we should call this. And he came up with Closer All the Time after several different variations.
And I thought I knew where the title came from because at the end of one of the chapters, I'm looking up Arnold, it says Closer All the Time, getting closer all the time. He could almost hear them scratching from room to room, talking about he's in an old chicken barn, getting closer all the time. But no, you said that's not necessarily where the title comes from.
Well, I'm not going to speak for Jim on that because it was probably a thought process for him. But I do know that it's a Nine Inch Nails song, too. And it fit. It really fit the whole mood of the book.
Well, we have just a couple minutes left, so I want to ask you, Genevieve, and you, Lewis, about your latest projects. I know you just had a book published a few months ago. Tell us about it.
Well, I did. It's the second book in the trilogy, the Five Stones trilogy. It's called Chanterelle. It picks up where The Fog of Forgetting left off in Cliffhanger, so the kids out there are happy that actually there was a second one. And I'm working on the third as we speak.
Wow. And editing at Island Port Press and raising two teenage boys.
Yes.
Okay. And what about you, Lewis? What are you working on?
I'm just finishing a novel that's called Halfway Rock that's actually set in Portland, 2015.
And I had the pleasure of reading an early version of that, and it's a fantastic book.
Tell me about
Thanks,
it.
Bill.
Other than that, it's set in Portland.
Well, it's set this year. It's about a family, and it's told from the four members of the family's vantage points. So it rotates in short chapters. I guess the sexy plot line is that it's about smuggling mountain lions from out west, bringing them back, and seeding a new population in Maine. So.
Well, some people think we already have some, as
yeah,
I'm sure you well know.
Yeah.
Bill, what do you want to tell us about it, having gotten to see it already?
Oh, it's a classic Bildungsroman. It's a coming of, I mean, for me, the real pleasure was reading about this young girl who is so incredibly interesting. She's an athlete and she's an intellectual. She's just coming of age sexually, and Lewis just does a beautiful job of presenting her to us and it's riveting.
That's great. You know, mm-hmm. We have an embarrassment of riches here in Maine, don't we? Of
yes,
incredible
we do.
Authors. And thank you all for joining us for the Maine Calling Book Club. Again, the book we were discussing is Closer All the Time by Jim Nichols, published by Island Port Press. If you haven't picked it up already, do so. It's a lovely, lovely novel. Genevieve, Bill, and Lewis, thank you so much for being here. Genevieve Morgan, writer and Island Port Press editor. She is the author of Fog of Forgetting and Chanterelle, which are the first two books in her Five Stones trilogy. She's also author of Undecided, Navigating Life and Learning After High School. Bill Lundgren is adjunct professor of English at Southern Maine Community College and a regular book reviewer and contributor to the literary blog Bill and Dave's CocktailHour.com. Lewis Robinson is the author of Water Dogs and Officer Friendly. His short fiction and essays have appeared in Sports Illustrated, the New York Times, Book Review, and on NPR's program Selected Shorts. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, a link to our audio archives, and a way to sign up for the podcast by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at midnight. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.